If people are dieting now more than ever before, why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that doesn't turn into fat when you consume it. Instead, it turns into a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body.
So getting more MCTs in your diet is like flipping a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which flushes out excess fat and calories. And Dr. Gundry has created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it comes in a tasty drink form. It actually tastes good. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized.
So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/RLRC and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. And again, that's GundryMD.com/RLRC.
Awesome.
All right, good deal.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In Minnesota, a husband who killed his wife during Bible study after she requested a divorce is sentenced. In Louisiana, an arsonist is finally captured after setting fires to 2 Livingston Parish schools. And in Illinois, a man is sentenced after he killed his girlfriend for filing a protective order. These stories and more coming at you today, Wednesday, September 18th, on Real Life Real Crime Daily, and I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton, and it's Wednesday, hump day.
Hump day Wednesday.
September's almost coming to an end.
Yeah.
On the downhill side of that, right?
Almost the whole year here.
Right?
Flew by. Got
October, November, December.
Yep.
So 3.5 months.
Yeah.
And people are back in school, and football season in swing.
Ooh, happy about that.
Hopefully, I mean, the high of this week is only 90 degrees here, which is good for us.
Yeah, that is good for, as strange as that sounds.
It's up in Wisconsin, it's really nice for their us. Deer season has started, and it's in the, you know, 60s.
Is it really? Oh, I'd love some 60s.
Yes, indeed. But anyway, let's get down to some true crime time for Wednesday.
All right, and we're going to start out in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
It's another cold place.
Yeah, I was there for Monday Night Football this past year.
Yeah. Well, months after pleading guilty to second-degree murder, a Minnesota man was sentenced to serve more than 3 decades in state prison for stabbing his wife, a mom of 5, 10 to 20 times with a hunting knife in front of family members at a Bible study. The violence unfolded just moments after she whispered something in the victim's ear that prompted her to shake her head no. The defendant, 40-year-old Robert Castillo, was sentenced Friday to spend 33 years in prison for murdering 41-year-old Karina Woodhull, and he must serve at least 2/3 of that sentence before he can be released. At sentencing, Woodhull's still grieving mother reportedly revealed that she found divorce papers in her daughter's car after the murder. She knew it was time to walk away, and that's why she's dead, the mother said. According to the St. Paul Police Department, cops were called to the home of Castillo's sister, where Bible study was held, at around 9 p.m. This was on March 21st of 2023. When officers arrived, they located an adult female who was suffering from apparent stab wounds to her upper body. Cops noted that the family members tackled and disarmed her admitted killer until authorities arrived. Multiple witnesses on the scene were holding an adult male suspect. Castillo's sister told police that she hosted the Bible study group at the home on Tuesday nights, and that Woodhull and Castillo had arrived together and sat on the couch. Once there, Castillo, a man with numerous felony convictions on his record, had apparently been holding Woodhull's hand, kissed her, and whispered something into his ear before pulling out the hunting knife and stabbing her repeatedly. Castillo's brother, who was also at the Bible study, told police that Woodhull and Castillo were having marital issues, hence the discovery of the divorce papers. Witnesses told police that they saw Castillo stab his wife 10 to 20 times and that Woodhull had pleaded for her life. "Don't let me die," one witness recalled Woodhull saying. Castillo had an active warrant for his arrest at the time of the stabbing, and he failed to appear in court in connection with charges that he had assaulted a prison guard while an inmate at a correctional facility in Stillwater. Castillo reportedly had 8 prior felony convictions, including an assault charge for beating the purported mother of his child with a hammer. Prior to her death, Corina Woodhull had worked for Jewel Fewbanks Recovery Services and helped others with substance abuse. Castillo's lawyer had asserted that his client was a meth and heroin user who was in the state of psychosis when he stabbed Woodhull.
No excuse.
I think something might have been wrong with her picker. It doesn't sound like this was a upstanding member of society by any means. What an asshole.
Help him out, trying to help him be a better person or whatever.
And fixing him.
Get stabbed to death when she tells him she don't want to be a part of him anymore. You know?
Yeah, and just a bizarre situation in that they're at Bible study and he's kissing and holding her hand.
And stabs her 10 to 20. Can you imagine being in that room seeing that?
No.
And she's begging for her life. I mean, I don't know. That's it's just out there, but it goes plays right into my next story. And in DuPage County, Illinois, a 29-year-old man will spend 7 decades behind bars for killing his 24-year-old live-in girlfriend and leaving a butcher knife in her leg in 2021. Now, DuPage County State's Attorney Robert Berlin announced that a judge sentenced Marco Antonio Rubio on September 11th to 70 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections for the first-degree murder of Esmeralda de Luna, the mother of their 3 children. He is required to serve 100% of his sentence before parole eligibility. Now, he was initially charged in May of 2021, and he's been locked up since, and he pled guilty in March. And according to prosecutors, on the night of May 19th, 2021, Villa Park police responded to a home on North Princeton Drive where they knocked on the door and heard crying coming from inside. Officers entered the house and found 2 young girls between 3 and 6 years old, as well as a male child around 1 year old. Police followed a trail of blood to DeLuna, lying in the kitchen with a large butcher knife in her leg and stab injuries to her torso. She was transported to a local hospital and pronounced deceased the following morning. And according to the state attorney's office, investigators learned that early in May of 2021, DeLuna filed an order of protection against Rubio, requiring him to move out of their home. And on May 19th, 2021, prosecutors said Rubio violated that protection order and broke into the home. He stabbed DeLuna numerous times in the torso and once in the leg before fleeing the scene. And authorities took him into custody the next morning while he was just walking in Villa Park. In a statement, Berlin said, "While what essentially amounts to a life sentence behind bars cannot erase the vicious murder of a loving mother, perhaps Esmeralda's surviving family and friends can find some measure of solace knowing justice was delivered in Esmeralda's name." I don't want to really, I mean, fuck, there's no justice for that.
No, and
kill the mother of 3.
Kill a mother of 3, and those protective orders, look, y'all, it's important to keep in mind. That's a piece of paper.
Yeah, and I've worked this case, and I tell people all the time, and I used to tell them, I said, that piece of paper's not going to stop a bullet.
Nope.
And I've worked the case, the one jumps forefront of my mind is the girl got the protective order. She worked at Popeyes and Walker and went 2 days later, he walked in and he shot her And then again, the gun jam, and he chased her to the back door and he cut her head off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all.
And her brother is actually a doctor now.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good for them. They're a good Christian family, good people. And but that dude was, he's just a piece of shit.
Total. Yeah. And if I recall correctly, because you did that case on Real Life for a Crime. Well, you did it in real life.
Yeah.
But you covered it in Real Life for a Crime. Yeah. The cameras were not working.
Yeah, yeah. I lied to him. I said, well, we had a manhunt, and I was still on the scene with the deceased female, and they got him. The manhunt got him, and I said, bring him straight to the detective's office, and I got him up there. Got him past his rights. And well, actually the dog got him a little bit.
Yeah.
And I got him to sign a medical waiver. And I just told him, I said, hey, you're fucked. We got you. And Popeyes has more cameras than Walmart. I knew the cameras weren't working. Right.
Right.
And, I said, we got you on film, everything you did. Now you got to explain it. And of course he took the, like it was an accident. I didn't really mean to do it, blah, blah, blah.
Whatever. Yeah.
But he thought we had him on camera, and I just lied to him.
Wow.
And he confessed. He was doing life in prison for it, but he's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Well, you like to set fires?
I like to.
kind of a strange question.
My youngest son is a little power maniac like me. I like to build fires, especially in one time we'll sit around a fire, drink beer and whatever, and hang out. Like a good fire in a fireplace and all that. But I didn't burn shit up when I was a kid.
Right.
These people, these serial killers and shit start out torching animals or something.
Yeah. Well, they say that when you're an arsonist and you set a fire, it's like having an orgasm.
You just sit there and look at it
and it's and there's not a whole lot of help for those people, in my opinion. But a Denham Springs man, whose home was under investigation for residential fires, was arrested for starting fires at two schools over the summer. And this was, one of them was Denham Springs High School, y'all, which is locally here in Livingston Parish and a major school, as was Seventh Ward Elementary School. Mm-hmm. So according to the Louisiana Office State Fire Marshal, officers arrested Jason Jones, 38, on two counts of simple arson and two counts of criminal trespass. This was on Thursday, September 12th. Jones is accused of intentionally starting a fire early Sunday morning, May 26th, on Range Avenue at Denham Springs High School, as well as a fire early Saturday morning, August 31st. On Highway 16 at 7th Ward Elementary School. So this guy was picking schools, of all places.
That's crazy. Well, I guess he knew nobody was going to be there.
Yeah. According to Fire Marshal's office, the suspect entered the high school campus on a bicycle and left toward Robbie Street, which is in Denham Springs, shortly before the fire was department was alerted. Surveillance video showed the suspect arriving and leaving on foot from the elementary school fire, according to the Fire Marshal's office. Officials stated another agency investigating residential fires, and this is where it gets good, at Jones's home this past week made the connection after noticing Jones' resemblance to the previously released surveillance video images. And I actually saw those images, and they were very grainy, which they always are. Yeah. It doesn't matter how good technology gets. When you need an image, it always doesn't exist.
Like Popeye's camera's not working. Yeah.
So they recognize that when they go to his house to investigate a fire he sets at his house. Detectives said Jones admitted his involvement in both cases and was then arrested and booked into the Livingston Parish Jail. Firefighters contained the high school fire to the English Hall on the west side of the campus, but officials estimated it cost hundreds of thousands of dollars in damage, and the elementary school fire was contained to a portable building in the back of the campus, but officials say it's a total loss. And the manner in which this guy was apprehended is the craziest part to me. I mean, talk about pushing your luck.
Yeah.
Let me set my own fire at my house and face to face with an investigator.
Right. Getting off on it.
Yeah.
The striking thing about it is he's 38 years old.
Yeah.
Generally, they start way young and they're going to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to have to go around and look at any unsolved arsons or probable arsons. And we have actually the investigators for the fire marshal's office are good people.
I bet they're pretty good investigators.
Yeah, one of them is a longtime friend of mine, Big Country, but he retired as a colonel from the state police and went over to be their head investigator.
Really?
And he's sharp and worked a lot of cases together.
I would think you got to be, because with a fire, you burn up most of the evidence, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, yeah. So you've got to be really good.
Really good friend of mine from out of state is Georgia. I forget what the name is. Kind of like the ATF, but it's for the state.
Yeah.
And he runs their department and is a polygraphist also.
Oh, really?
But investigates fire scenes. And of course, the most tragic ones are when people burn up, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, I don't know, but keeping on the theme again, but here we go. We're going to talk about schools and we're going to talk about what could have been fires. So last Friday they had a bunch of evacuations, which came after a bomb threat. Now, two middle schools and a high school in Springfield, Ohio, were evacuated because of two bomb threats made the morning of Friday, September 13th, as well as the Springfield City Hall and two other government buildings. And so a third middle school was also preemptively closed before school started. Now, Springfield Police Department spokesperson Karen Graves says that an initial email sent around 7:21 a.m. local time targeted several city commissioners and a city employee. Another email sent about 25 minutes later directly threatened Cliff Park High School, Perrin Woods Elementary School, and Roosevelt Middle School, as well as City Hall and the City Bureau of Motor Vehicles and Ohio License Bureau of Southside. Now, in response to these threats, local and regional law enforcement, along with public safety partners, have acted promptly. This is what Graves said, adding that law enforcement used bomb-sniffing canine units and can conduct thorough inspections and cleared the facilities listed in the threats. Now, the evacuations come one day after Springfield announced it was evacuating and shutting down government buildings and several other schools because of a bomb threat made in an email on Thursday, September 12th. Graves said local police are working with the FBI to determine the origin of these email threats. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and, you know, 99.9% of the time those bomb threats are just that. They don't pan out. They get them at schools a lot, too, with the swatting shit.
Yeah.
And all of that, but all it takes is one to be right.
I tell you,
so they have to search them all the same way.
I tell you a true story, and I don't even have to say swim on this one. I was in high school, and it was my like 16th birthday. No, it must have been a bit later. Probably my 17th birthday, my junior year.
Yeah,
and it just didn't happen back then. There was no cell phones, no internet, none of that shit. And the school got a bomb threat called in and said they evacuated us all to the football field. They didn't have canine bomb dogs and shit back then or anything.
Right.
Plus, I was a small town, right? And but they sent us home for the day. Turned out, allegedly, it was two of my buddies that had graduated the year before wanted to get me out of school my birthday.
Oh, that's bad.
And one of them went on to have a career as a teacher, and the other one, I think, is in prison.
Well,
it's not funny though, because you know, fuck with everything, all the other crazy shit's going on these days. Who knows if it's real or not?
Yeah, that's right. And when you grow up and you realize you have kids, especially when something like that happens, you freak out. I mean, you're scared to death.
Well, I'm gonna give a shout out to Charles Andrews.
Is that the one that called in the bomb threat?
No. He was in my class, and so he did 27 years in the Navy as an EOD specialist.
Good.
And retired like top commander or whatever.
Yeah.
And I saw him and his buddy, who also was retired EOD, I guess a week and a half ago at a dove hunt, and I hadn't seen him in 20 years.
Yeah.
But he said, man, I listen to y'all shit all the time.
Wow.
And they're both retired high commanders from the Navy.
Very good.
They live in Niceville, Florida, by Pensacola.
Awesome.
And
yeah.
Shout out to y'all, and thank you for your service.
Well, we're going to go to Las Vegas.
Las Vegas,
City of Sin.
Been there so many times, not just for play, but a lot of times. Did I ever tell you about the White Rabbits in Las Vegas? Holy shit, did you think I was high? Yeah, I used to go there a lot for work. And this one time I was doing surveillance on this wedding party, and I won't say anything else about it. It's not a typical church. And anyway, long story short, I was sitting in this parking lot before everybody arrived, and it was dark, and I saw this fucking white rabbit. Big-ass fucking rabbit, like 4 or 5 pounds. I mean, we'd kill him and fry him here, right? And then later on, I saw another one. And then I saw like 25 fucking white rabbits, big-ass white rabbits all around this church parking lot. I've moved to different spots.
Yeah.
And so I looked it up, and turned out right there in a suburb of Las Vegas, somebody had got a rabbits like that for pets, and they were overbreeding, so they just turned them loose, and now the whole fucking area is over.
No way.
Like, big ass white rabbits.
I'm dude, like, that's where the phrase fucking like rabbits comes from.
I know. But I'll tell you what.
That's all they do.
That's like the lakes up north in Wisconsin shit. It's illegal to bring live crawfish up there.
Yeah.
We do it anyway for crawfish wolves.
Yeah.
But because the crawfish got out in their lakes, and they considered them an invasive species. I'm like,
what?
We could fix the rabbit problem and the crawfish problem. Send a bunch of Cajuns
to
both locations and give them a couple weeks, and it'd be cleaned out.
That'd be cleaned out. Yeah. That's right.
But anyway, I'm sorry. You're still
no, great story.
Las Vegas.
Woody, do you know why I want to learn more Italian?
Why, I go?
Because my niece is getting married next month. And that means a wedding full of these crazy Italians from out of town.
Huh. And when it comes to learning a new language, there's only one leader, Rosetta Stone.
Rosetta Stone's the most trusted language learning program, period. I've come a good ways using Rosetta Stone, but it's time to take it to the next level. My niece's wedding will be great prep for a trip I want to take next year.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. No English translations. Rosetta Stone helps you pick up a language naturally. First with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention.
And the True Accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Lifetime membership has all 25 of the languages for the rest of your life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today.
That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 languages for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with a subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to be curious and empowers them how to choose to learn. Now, Cindy used IXL in the classroom as a teacher, and now uses it to homeschool our youngest son in the 9th grade. The videos are what she finds that benefits him most in math because he's a very visual learner. The perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum, IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational game lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving, and everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. Instant grading, helpful progress reporting. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Flexible and personalized. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. It's fun for kids, and kids love IXL's positive feedback, awards, and educational games. And it's trustworthy. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
We're in Las Vegas, and for this story, a 47-year-old gas station employee is facing an attempted murder charge for severely beating a customer after the victim broke into the store's nacho cheese machine.
Oh, my God.
True story. In the early morning hours of September 3rd, Las Vegas Metro Police Department officers responded to a gas station after receiving a call about a man on the grass who was bleeding from his head, nose, and ears. Officers arrived and transported the victim to a nearby hospital where he was being treated for multiple brain bleeds, skull fractures, and other injuries. A man getting gas noticed the victim and spoke with the gas station attendant, a guy by the name of Myron Bully. You can't make that up, can you? He was standing outside. Bully said he was not going to call 911. He better have learned a lesson. Right. The witness then contacted police about the situation. So the police come, and Bully tells them that the victim was buying nachos, and he put too much cheese on the chips, which caused the machine to malfunction. He kicked the victim out of the store, but the man returned minutes later and said he wanted his nachos. Bully allegedly pushed him out of the store while holding a baseball bat, and they got into a physical altercation. Bully punched the victim and struck him with the bat several times. Police wrote in the report that Bully hit him so hard the victim could not get up for several minutes. Police asked him if he struck the victim hard with the bat, and he responded, "If it was hard, his head would have been smashed on the fucking floor, and he would have been dead." Bully is being charged with attempted murder and battery with use of a deadly weapon, resulting in substantial bodily harm. And his bail was set at $10,000 for attempted murder. That blew my mind almost as much as the story.
Some preset bond thing.
Well, I like nachos as much as the next guy, but I don't know if it's worth an attempted murder charge.
I don't think
Come on, people.
I don't think so.
Pick your battle.
I really, really, really like fucking nachos. Nachos and popcorn in my jam.
Yeah, you put jalapenos on them?
Absolutely. But you know who has the best nacho cheese? You're going to know this. Absolutely, 1,000% Tiger Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
You can't beat them motherfucking nachos, boy. But you can buy that big can of that nacho cheese at those Costco and Sam's and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'll be loving me some motherfucking nacho.
Yeah, nachos are hard to beat.
Yep. And the popcorn. I actually have a movie theater popcorn machine in my house.
Yeah.
A real one.
Yeah.
And you got to buy the real package. They cook it in coconut oil. They don't use regular coconut oil. That's in the movie theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. So I don't know why. It gives it a special taste.
A little fun fact from Woody
Earth. There you go. Make me hungry this morning. All right. Look. Wow. This is a crazy effing story here, y'all. And let's go to Colorado. Okay. So a guy named Mark Redwine was convicted of second degree murder and child abuse, resulting in the death in the 2012 killing of his 13-year-old son, Dylan Redwine, So on November 18, 2012, Dylan Redwine was picked up by his father, Mark Redwine, at Durango La Plata County Airport in Colorado for a court-ordered visit for Thanksgiving. That was the last time the 13-year-old boy was seen alive. And Dylan's mother, who was in the midst of a divorce and custody battle with Mark Redwine, reported him missing the next day. Dylan's remains, including, this is where it gets really fucked up. Dylan's remains, including a decapitated head, were found a long time later near Mark's home.
Mm.
Now, while law enforcement searched for the boy, Mark pleaded for his safe return and denied any involvement in his death. But he was eventually identified as a suspect and arrested 5 years later in 2017 on charges of second-degree murder and child abuse resulting in death. In a trial, prosecutors argued there had been tension in the relationship between father and son after the boy discovered graphic, compromising sexual photos of Mark, the dad, including several depicting him cross-dressing and wearing a diaper and handling human waste.
Oh, my God.
12-year-old boy found this in his dad, right? So Dylan's older brother, Corey, said that he believes the graphic photographs the boys found on their dad, of their dad, may have motivated the crime, and said Dylan planned to confront his father about them. The brothers had found the photographs on their father's laptop during a bonding road trip the boys had taken with their dad, right? So Dylan's partial remains were located in June of 2013 during a search of Middle Mountain on Vallecito Reservoir. Prosecutors alleged at trial, Mark removed his son's head, which wasn't found until late 2015 by hikers nearly 2 miles away from where his body was found.
No.
Fucking crazy. Experts testified the boy likely died from a skull fracture as well as sharp force injuries. Mark was sentenced in October 2021 to 48 years in prison after being convicted of second-degree murder and child abuse resulting in death. After the judge's decision, Mark continued to maintain his innocence, calling the sentence fake justice. Yeah, well, you know what? I bet he's going to get some justice when he goes to prison.
Mm.
After all this time, listening to what was heard in the courtroom, you still take absolutely no responsibility for what you did to Dylan, Judge Jeffrey Wilson told Mark before handing down the sentence. I have trouble remembering a convicted criminal defendant that has shown such an utter lack of remorse for his criminal behavior. And he sentenced his ass. Right? You're 12. I mean, you're the punk ass cross-dressing shit motherfucker. And your son
cut his head off
and killed him. And then gets one of those lying motherfuckers gets on TV. Oh, please send my baby home. Yeah. Da, 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 da. When meanwhile, you already cut his head off.
Reminds me of that Peterson story you're covering right now on the original.
Yeah. And now he just came out with his first interview in 20 years because the LA Innocence Project took his shit up as total bullshit. And he's a piece.
Yeah. But, well, we're going to go to Illinois and, you know, if you're going to meet with your school principal over your kid or whatever, you may want to put your cocaine back in your car before you go in there. And I'm going to tell you why. A woman has been arrested in Illinois after fighting with the principal of an elementary school who had told her during a meeting that police would be called because she dropped baggies of cocaine on the floor.
Nice.
The incident involved Shakita Barfield, and it happened last Wednesday morning at Welsh Elementary School in Rockford. Barfield was at the school for a meeting with the principal when she dropped baggies of suspected cocaine. When the principal picked up the baggies, Barfield became upset when she was told the police would be called to the scene.
Nice.
The 33-year-old is accused of punching the principal several times in the face, scratching his face and arms, biting him and using his tie to strangle him.
Oh, Lord.
So she wasn't wanting to get the cops called, apparently, and right. and that's not the way to do it. Mm-hmm. She is now facing charges including possession of a controlled substance, aggravated battery to a school employee, and disorderly conduct. As of Saturday, she is being held without bond at Winnebago County Jail. And it's still not clear what the meeting was about, but as the brawl unfolded, the school was temporarily placed on lockdown, and the principal, it has been reported, is going to be fine. The injuries were non-life threatening, but
crazy, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, drop your cocoa on the floor.
Yep, yeah, and
the yayo.
The yayo is just stupidity. Yeah, it reminded me of that. You know, like, you know, attack your principal and shit like that and shut the school down and all
yeah.
that. Did you see that judge last week that, since that dude and they were doing the pre-sentencing hearing, pre-sentencing hearing where the victims got to give their impact statements and then the dude got to give up and give his statement, the bad guy did.
Yeah.
And he got up and said, "Well, Your Honor, you know, I'm so sorry and da 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 da, da and I'm going to take these classes and do all this and, you know, asking for mercy, just poor pitiful me, and I'm gonna do all this shit to change my life. I'm really a good dude." And the judge sentenced him like 30 fucking years or whatever it was anyway. And as soon as she sentenced him, he fucking runs through the courtroom, jumps over the bench, and he got her down and was beating her ass, almost killed her.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm pretty sure your charges got upgraded.
That's
as dumb as bringing in the cocaine and then you're going to start a fight for the fucking principal.
Yeah, and just make it worse, strangle him with his own tie. Yeah.
And bite him and everything else. Crazy, crazy, crazy. It brings me back to the days my parents having to go to meet with the administrators. I can promise you I deserved every one of them. Yeah. One of them resulted in me being expelled from a school, and the other ones, well, we'll just leave those for another day. Let's go to another dad story. Holy shit. All right. Prosecutors say Sandra Hernandez Cazares was severely intoxicated when she parked the car near her apartment and mother and daughter. Now, just stick with me, y'all. And because her daughter was in the car. And mother and daughter lost consciousness in the extreme summer heat. Now, relatives broke the window of the white Ford Expedition parked near the mother's California apartment and pulled the limp 3-year-old from the scorching car. But Illy Elizabeth Ruiz was already dead, with Anaheim police saying in a press release that they believe she died of complications from heat stroke on Friday, September the 6th, and her autopsy is pending. Now, her mom, Sandra Hernandez Cazares, was allegedly unconscious in the locked vehicle with a blood alcohol content nearly 4 times the legal limit. Now, you know what happens if you get pulled over here? And you're a 0.30, which is only 3 times the legal limit, they have to take you to the hospital immediately.
Oh, really?
0.40, you're dead.
Yeah.
So this chick was a 4.0. And so this is all according to Orange County prosecutors. And she is charged with felony involuntary manslaughter and felony child abuse causing great bodily injury with an enhancement charge based on Illy's age. And the prosecutor said that in the press release that Hernandez Cazares and the father of the 4 children had pushed for stricter DUI laws after their 2 young sons were fatally run over by a drunk driver while camping in North Dakota, 2012. So you guess this, their other 2 kids got run over by a DWI or DUI driver. They pushed for legislation and she gets so fucked up. Their little 3-year-old dies in the car and passes out. You know, recalling the early accident, the father, Juan Rez, said in a phone interview that he had suffered a collapsed lung, flatlining, and had to be airlifted off the campgrounds. This is when the other kids got killed, y'all. They should have let me die there too, Rhea says. I would not be going through this again. Calling Illy my princess. The grieving father who named his young child for the abbreviation of I love you. So it's I-L-I, y'all. Remembered her bubbly personality and penchant for everything princesses, especially Frozen's Elsa. And in pictures and videos he shared of his daughter and the five-year-old son, Lazarus Ruiz, the kids are seen scrambling eggs and cooking stovetop hot dogs, the little girl grinning up at the camera, fork in hand. And such quiet days were a part of the life he rebuilt after the loss of Cyrus Alexander Ruiz 9 and Alaris Marcus Ruiz 5. And we had a conversation about Lazarus not growing up to be an only child, Ruiz recalls, of deciding to leave Illy, and now I have just one child left. And Ruiz says Hernandez Cazares, who he met in high school, had never recovered from the deaths of their eldest sons, and the couple split up 2 years ago. She would never do this to her daughter on purpose, he says, but it doesn't change what is done. And family members searched for the 42-year-old mom Friday, September 6th, after Lazarus' kindergarten reported that he had not been picked up. And this is according to prosecutors. Around 4:20 p.m., authorities responded to the 1300 block of North Fashion Lane, where prosecutors say relatives and paramedics tried to revive Illy, who had died in what prosecutors described extreme temperatures. And but doctors believe she had been dead for several hours before relatives found him inside the vehicle, which police and prosecutors say was littered with empty alcohol bottles. And that's just crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She was over a 0.30. So you lose your two kids, you're married, happily married, you got to raise an all-American family, and the drunk driver hits you and kills two of your kids. Most of the families I worked where they had kids that died usually is murders. Like 98% of them end up getting divorced.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I can. Probably the worst thing you can go through.
And then this family splits. And evidently mom never got over it, got so hammered that she fell asleep in a car and her baby died.
Wow. Horrible.
That's a bad story. It really is.
Yeah.
I feel for those people. I really do.
Awful. All right. Well, we're going to go to, we're going to tell you about a Illinois Correctional Center. And we're going to talk about the dangers that you can run into when you're tossing sales, right? So those, these CEOs,
they'll say tossing salads.
there's a lot of danger there too, but that, not related to this story. But of course, when you are a CEO, many times you have to do what they call toss sales, which you go in there and you're looking for contraband, right? Yep.
Shakedown.
So two jailers were actually sent to the hospital after searching a cell at the Illinois River Correctional Center. This was on Wednesday of last week. According to information from the Illinois Department of Corrections, employees at the correction center learned there might be a tattoo gun in a cell shared by three individuals in custody. Staff were directed to search the cell, and after the search, a sergeant and an officer, they began to experience what they termed as medical symptoms. Both were checked by staff before being taken by ambulance to the local hospital for treatment. Investigation staff retrieved the confiscated items from the cell to check them for unknown substances, and they did identify an unknown powdery substance on the tattoo gun. Jail staff were not immediately able to identify the substance, which was sent to the state police crime lab to be tested, and the investigation is ongoing, but both the sergeant and officer were treated and eventually were released.
Bet you $1 million is fentanyl.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Absolutely. 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
And it goes back to Billy Amy. It was always proactive like I was in searching the car and got like a speck of some shit on his hand, and it automatically made him fall out, and he like overdosed. He didn't even know what it was.
Yeah.
Just a speck, a touch of it. and absorb through his skin. Boom.
That quick.
The ground. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And so fentanyl is a real deal, and especially in the prisons. And you know, like Elaine Hunt's and the investigations stuff going on in Angola, the people dying inside.
Just had somebody die yesterday. It wasn't drug related, but at Elaine Hunt, it was a fight. Mm-hmm. What they're saying that where somebody was killed.
That's just crazy.
Yeah. But I was thinking fentanyl as well. And you would think that they would be wearing gloves and, protective equipment of some sort.
I never did. Of course, fentanyl wasn't an issue. When I was in law enforcement, fentanyl wasn't an issue. Other than one time I had a kid that OD'd, like he'd got a fentanyl patch, which, you know, most people don't realize fentanyl is a properly used medical pain reliever.
Yeah, it's prescribed certain cases.
Not the shit that they're making now that's flooding the streets. But way back then, found this kid. It was right there in Walker behind the Burger King, the little trailer park. And we went in, he was dead in the bed. And I found the empty fentanyl. They have fentanyl patches to time release pain. And what he did was he took that fentanyl. It was prescribed, and he took that patch and he chewed it up. Oh, get high, yeah, and it killed him. And so fentanyl. Anyway, back then I guess I always thought I was bulletproof. Even up to this year when I was cleaning those 17 hogs, and they were like, You don't wear gloves when you clean hogs. And I said, I might miss out on a chance of giving a hog something, right? As a joke. I didn't ever knew you could really fucking get in. And I ended up dying for 3 days, nine nights in the hospital and all that. But I don't know. Fentanyl, man, I think we ought to go to war with those motherfuckers. Everybody that's making, whatever country's making, not the country, fly a plane over those factories and blow the motherfuckers up.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was their people attacking our country,
which is essentially what they're doing. Yeah, it's just not with conventional bombs. Coming in
with rifles and shooting in instead of fentanyl, you'd do it.
I agree.
It's horrible.
It is the biggest plague in the country.
And I've seen them all. Right. From when crack started to the next big one would have been meth, and then it was heroin, and then, you know, I'm sorry, it was pain pills. It was Oxys and Roxys, and then they got too expensive, so it swapped to heroin, and now fentanyl. But fentanyl makes them all look fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't discriminate, and doesn't take but a touch. Yeah.
That's it. And, you know, one thing that I will say that they've done a really good, and I think it might make a dent eventually, is they are now going after the dealers for murder when they sell fentanyl to somebody that dies. So they track that back. And guess what? If you're a dealer and you sold that fentanyl, you murdered them.
And
they didn't used to do that.
We did it on some Oxys.
Yeah.
When these three teenagers died of overdose and got a conviction of second degree murder.
Yeah.
But I absolutely believe it should be done, and it's being done all the time now.
Yep.
It's a dollar and cents issue. These people buying the fentanyl for so much cheaper and are cutting everything. Like my little buddy that died last year, you know, prime of his life, master's degree from LSU in accounting. And he's like 24 years old, smartest dude I ever met, and took a fucking, what he thought was a Xanax, and it was laced with fentanyl and killed him.
All it takes is one time.
And I don't know, it's just fucked up. Oh, but what I was saying is it makes their profits so much more, dude. Like if you get a kilo of cocaine and a kilo of fentanyl, you can make that cocaine. Because, I mean, if you go down the store with cocaine, you don't know the fentanyl's in it. You just know you got real fucked up.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's some good yayo, right? Good shit. But these people are not chemists.
Nope.
That's the problem. And the problem is, even if you were a chemist, you're getting the shit in from wherever, and you don't know what they put in it.
Yeah.
You know? And so we need to do something about that, people. See, I bet you there's not a person that I know that doesn't know someone who's died or been affected in some way by fentanyl.
Yeah. Right.
Put a shame to it. Put an end to it.
Well,
I'll get off my horse now and then.
Any final thoughts?
Yep. Just love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. You know, stay safe, love one another, and all that good podcaster shit.
That's right. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And we're your host of Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Peace.